Can rates come down before the economy hits a wall? Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. With me today is Ben Miller, founder of Fundrise. Hi, Ben. It's great to have you back on with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So not a whole lot of movement today. Stocks were kind of flat. Even with the wobbles this week, though, S&P putting in its best Q1 since 2019, but it seems like a lot of people are wondering if that can continue. But we did have crypto up, gold up, the dollar up. And interestingly, bond yields also were moving higher ahead of the PCE inflation reading on Friday. Of course, that's going to hit when a lot of market participants are out for the Easter holiday. But Ben, we wanted to maybe like pull the lens back a little bit because there's been a consistent theme that's emerged. I would really say just in our conversations recently, sort of, you know, maybe last week, definitely this week. And that is the risk that maybe the Fed doesn't ease this year at all, and that US rates are headed higher, not lower. You know, and if that's the case, what does that mean? And it doesn't seem like the market's ready for that. And I know that you've been thinking about this a lot. I wanted to ask you about it because of your unique perspective. You know, given that you invest in the commercial real estate market and tech, you know, you're sort of on both sides of markets that would be really impacted by that. And then in the lead up to today, you shared this amazing deck that you sent us. And we just thought maybe as a treat, if you would be willing to share it with our audience, because it just tells such a great story of how you're thinking about this, because it's the $1 trillion question, the multi-trillion dollar question, it seems to me.
Yeah, I went out and did some research because I've been confused by the economy. And I was surprised, maybe even shocked by what I found. And so then I started to try to pull it together into a deck, because best way to think something through is by actually writing it down. And so I feel like I found a piece of data that opened my eyes to I think how things might play out that I hadn't seen anywhere else. Like really, I mean, it seems like it should be everywhere. I hadn't seen it anywhere. And so I thought, oh my God, this is so interesting. Like I sent it to you. I mean, we finished the deck last night. I said, well, people need to see this.
I know. We were like, wait, this is so good. We want to share this. So we don't usually do this, everyone, but I think that this is the kind of stuff usually you only get if you're institutions or you're, you know, really high level investors. So we're so appreciative that you're willing to do this with us, Ben. Just so you know, everyone, we're still going to do questions, but like, let's have Ben walk us through his thinking. And then as you're listening to him, think about the questions that are coming up in your mind, because as Ben pointed out, it's kind of a unique perspective and people are going to push back. And, you know, usually already people kind of challenge you on some of it, I think, Ben. So think about what your questions are or what you're wondering about, and then we'll do that at the end. But Ben, tell us how you're wrapping your head around this. Walk us through it.
Okay. Well, so can I share the deck now?
Please.
Okay. I call it the race against recession, because I think the underlying challenge in the US is that we have high debt loads. Everybody knows we have a lot of debt. And basically our chance of succeeding is to grow our way out of that level of debt. But let me just sort of like walk everybody through this argument. So let's start with the question of like sort of how much debt is there in the United States? And I hadn't actually seen anybody to put all US debt into a single number, which is 96 trillion. This number comes from the Fed. So the you know, St. Louis Federal Reserve will talk about total US debts. And this includes government, you know, both state and local and federal, you know, home mortgages, household debt, business banking. So this is $96 trillion. So basically, if you think about America has $96 trillion of debt as of Q3 2023. Okay, so here's my question for everybody. So in which period did US grow debts faster? The last 15 years from 2008 to 2023, or in the 1990s. So the 1990s, great, you know, growth period, internet bubble, internet boom, the Berlin Wall came down, or so that's a 10-year period, or in this last 15-year period when we had the great financial crisis and the pandemic stimulus. So which period had more US debts grow faster? And the interesting thing is that the 1990s, debt grew at twice the rate. We actually had accumulated twice as much debt in the 1990s as in the last 15 years. And so like that was shocking to me because I felt like the narrative is that there's all this debt accumulation, especially since the 2008 financial crisis. And then if you look at the debt growth rates, actual debt growth rates in America have been declining. It was actually even higher in the 80s. And it really leveled out since the great financial crisis. And so you actually have two eras. You have this era before the great financial crisis when debt growth exploded. So you basically had debt, the amount of debt in America grow by 5.6 times compared to GDP. And then it actually leveled out. So debts had been growing about the same rate as GDP since the great financial crisis. And so that is completely contrary to the narrative. So like, if we go really into the numbers a second here, for just because I feel like there's a lot of numbers here, but bear with me. But if you look at the far right, when you think about somebody who buys a house, the question the mortgage broker will ask is, what's your debt to income ratio? What's your DTI? And so the US is like debt to income ratio actually has been improving since the great financial crisis and it's come down. So actually we've actually made progress on debt, which is just mind blowing to me because I would have thought that the opposite is true. Okay. So I'm teeing this up because here we go. There was an exception, right? The exception was the 2008 financial crisis. And that crisis, there's a lot of narratives around it. But one narrative I think that is, I hadn't really appreciated is that we had grown these debt loads to very high levels. And then we raised interest rates. So from 2003 to 2006, the Fed raised interest rates from 1% to 5.5%, right? So that sounds very familiar to today, right? Interest rates went up, a lot of debt load. And so basically you have all this debt and it repriced to higher mortgage rates, higher interest rates. And so the debt to income in the United States skyrocketed. And I think that was a big contributor to why there was a financial crisis. So, okay, having said all that, basically looking forward, the question people ask me is, what does that mean looking forward? I called it the great deleveraging, but the big thing happening in the world today is we went from a zero interest rate environment to a much higher interest rate environment. And that transition has been surprisingly smooth. And I basically think that's, we shouldn't get too complacent because there's a good reason. The reason it's been smooth is that all of that debt takes time to reset to the new rates. So the average duration of all US debts is about 6 years. You know, more home mortgages is longer and businesses, well, short bank debts much shorter. Most banks are basically deposits. And so you have sort of this average duration. So basically it's going to take 6 years approximately for most US debt to reprice from a ZERP environment, from zero interest rate environment to higher for longer. And so that's why there's been this delay. So if you look at this thing, there's been this delay let me go back to something. There's been this delay. And the reason there's been a delay is that basically most of the costs, the consequences of high interest rates haven't hit most Americans, most businesses. So now having said that, the question is basically take this idea of a soft landing, which is the Fed's forecast. The Fed has a forecast for a soft landing, basically where the interest rates go from 5 to 4 to 3 to 2, right? Over the course of from 20 now to 2028. So over the course of a few years here, everything moves gradually. Now I take that forecast. So, okay, let's just take the Fed's forecast, accept the premise and sort of apply it to the United States. And so over the course of that period, basically the cost of debt service is going to increase by 50% as all the debts in America slowly but surely reprice. And this is the punchline, this slide, because as every loan comes due and it reprices to the new higher interest rate, you pay higher mortgage payment or higher debt service. Mm-hmm. And so debt service in America was a little under $4 trillion in 2022 and it's going to go to close to $6 trillion. So 50% more debt service or 50% higher cost, $2 trillion. And so that, what I talked to somebody about it yesterday and they were saying like, well, what does that mean? I said, well, let's just think of you as a person. If you all of a sudden your mortgage rates and your credit card debt went up by 50%, like what would happen to you? Right? You couldn't afford it. Mm. Right. So how does the country afford $2 trillion more of debt service? And it, just to put that in perspective, well, here's the phrase. I'll go, maybe put it in perspective. Let's, okay. Sorry. There's a lot here. There's a lot in this deck. No, this, we can come back to this.
Lay it on us, Ben. Lay it on us.
Okay. I know tables of numbers can be hard for people. So I just wanted to, but I like to show my work. And basically what this is saying is that as they lower rates, that we have a soft landing, we also, debt growth in America, you know, we do grow debts. I'm forecasting a 5% debt growth and it slowly resets, this middle thing, percentage of debts that reset, right? And so the debt service increases because the amount of debts increases and because of debt service and because of interest rates. And then GDP is growing and sort of you end up at this period right in 2026 when you have high debt to income ratio, high increase in the amount of debt service, which is $2 trillion more. So that's the soft landing, right? That's a soft landing. Like the people are now saying no landing, right? So no landing means higher for longer, even longer than what is in the soft landing forecast. So here are the three scenarios, right? There's the bottom one is no landing. The middle one is soft landing. And then the top one is low interest rates. And you just see the amount on the far right, the amount of increase in debt service and the amount of sort of the debt to income ratio. I mean, it skyrockets. So if we have a no landing scenario, right, where interest rates are higher forever, basically, I mean, and people say, oh, 5% Fed funds is not that high. They weren't that high when we had low debt ratios. But now that we have $100 trillion of debt, is a totally different ball of wax. So like, just to put that in perspective, how much is $1 to $3 trillion in additional annual mortgage payments or annual, you know, interest payments? It's all retail trade in America for a year, mm-hmm. All manufacturing, all the GDP of the entire manufacturing sector would have to go to pay this additional higher interest rate. You're liquidating an Amazon every year, a NVIDIA every year, just to pay this higher interest. So this is what normally causes a slowdown in the economy or causes a financial crisis because country can't afford that, but it hasn't happened yet because of that lagging time to reset the rates. Right. So just to go back, let me just go back to this thing, right?
Yeah.
You don't see it hitting the sort of peak cost until 2025, right? And by then actually rates are coming down and you see that rates could, the total amount of debt service actually goes to $2.25 trillion increase, even though rates have been falling for almost 2 years. So it's such a lag, such a lagging.
Lags on the way in, but this is the problem. It lags on the way when rates are going lower. That's still, you still have that line above the other one. That's the problem.
Hey, everyone. We're going to take a quick break right now to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
You've heard the headlines. Inflation is unchecked. The dollar is collapsing. The government is printing too much money. Well, the fear may be real, but there is a solution. Gold. Gold isn't collapsing, and gold's value increases during inflationary times. Noble Gold Investments is here to help you protect your wealth. Noble Gold Investments is the gold IRA company that Americans trust. The founders of Noble Gold have more than 20 years of combined experience in buying gold and silver. They have secured more than $1 billion in precious metals for their clients. Whether you're a seasoned investor or new to the game, Noble Gold Investments simplifies and secures your gold investment journey. You see, unlike money, the government can't just print more gold. It's your shield in times of economic uncertainty. And gold remains steady when inflation is on the rise and the dollar is in turmoil. So, invest in something you can hold. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com/vision to get started. Don't wait. That's noblegoldinvestments.com/vision.
You've heard the headlines. Inflation is unchecked. The dollar is collapsing. The government is printing too much money. The fear is real, but there is a solution: gold. The government can't print more gold. Gold isn't collapsing, and gold's value increases during inflationary times. Noble Gold Investments is here to help you protect your wealth. Noble Gold Investments is the gold IRA company that Americans trust. The founders of Noble Gold have more than 20 years of combined experience in buying gold and silver. They've secured more than $1 billion in precious metals for their clients. Whether you're a seasoned investor or new to the game, Noble Gold Investments simplifies and secures your gold investment journey. Choose between a tax-advantaged gold IRA or have physical gold delivered to your door. Noble Gold Investments ensures a seamless and easy transaction. Invest in something you can hold. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com/vision to get started. Don't wait. That's noblegoldinvestments.com/vision.
Right. So you see basically the lag on the way in and you see the lag on the way out. And so that's basically the I could talk about sort of like, what can we do about it? But the essential argument and the essential challenge we have is, how does America have an economy that's still growing at healthy rates and paying $2 trillion more in debt payments? That typically, right, if you're a person and you can, or you're a company, you can invest in, you know, innovation, technology, education. You're like, oh, I can't afford to do that because I have to pay higher debts. I have to pay my interest payments. So it usually slows down growth. And I'm seeing here that although it hasn't happened yet, I mean, this is the math. There's like,
yeah, we're kind of dead man walking. I mean, it hasn't happened yet, but it's coming. You know, I got excited in the beginning because I thought there was hope when we all got that question wrong and that the 90s had higher debt levels, but it didn't kill us then. Is there a lesson in that?
Yeah. So I have the hope, and I actually am hopeful. So basically, like, there's like,
well, just to underscore what we got to, because you're answering the question I just asked, but I just want to underscore that it seems like some kind of terrible pain recession is inevitable on that rate reset, given if interest rates, even in a soft landing, it seems like it's almost catastrophic and unsustainable. What will happen as those higher rates start to move in, 25, 26. Seems like a recession would be inevitable, and maybe that's the best case scenario. You have you also face the risk of maybe something breaking, which is we stopped talking about that because those interest rate payments servicing that debt gets so difficult. So that's the dilemma we're facing. And then this is how is it possible? Is that fair?
Right. So basically, you have $2 trillion a year more you have to pay. So how could we possibly, where's the money come from, right? How could we possibly do that? And there's basically three levers we have, right? Which is high real growth, high nominal growth, and or slowing the amount of debt we have. I guess there's another one, which is you can print your way out. You can borrow your way out of it, but that delays it. So there's a worse version where it gets worse, but I'm saying that this is where it gets better. So how could we basically sort of dodge this bullet? And high real growth, what's interesting about high real growth is that it basically happened before, and that low real growth was like what we've been experiencing since mid 2000s, basically great financial crisis to the pandemic, was a low growth period. And I think, and I think it's a pretty clear likelihood that we go into a high growth period because of AI. And so if we get that extra growth, we basically can grow our way out of the hole, the $2 trillion hole. So that's one possibility. And another one, which is similar, is just high nominal growth. And I don't know if most people know, but during the 2010s, we had really poor growth. I mean, it was because of the low productivity growth, but low growth is just absolutely kills not just the economy, but it also has all these political and social consequences. And so it's actually all you have to believe is we go back to a period of high growth that was normal in America before the great financial crisis. And we're seeing it in the economy today. So that both these things seem not just feasible, they actually seem like they're happening at the moment. So it's very promising. And the third thing when you happen is to slow the debt growth. And this is, again, counter to the narrative everybody thinks, which is that we have a lot of debt growth, but debt growth slowed. Debt growth slowed a lot. And so if we can maintain basically the slower debt growth and have higher real and nominal growth, basically, that's the magic. And just to sort of like, you know, if you want to know what's your, like, I give my kids an allowance every day, like, what's your allowance? Basically, we can actually have an allowance of $5 trillion a year of new debt. And the federal government can just borrow $2 trillion a year. And everybody can basically, businesses, banks can continue to grow the way they have. And the household, the interesting thing is that the reason why debt growth slowed so much in the last decade was because household debt growth slowed down. Everybody else actually maintained high debt growth, but household debt growth slowed from what it used to be 6-8% to 2.5%. And I think that one of the reasons why household felt so strapped, like why households, people yeah. have felt poor, but businesses and banks and governments felt rich, is that they were borrowing a lot more money at much faster rates than individuals.
So why do you think that is? Why is household debt, the dynamics so different? Because it doesn't feel like we do anything that, in fact, most people would say they feel like they're, you know, university costs are higher, healthcare costs are higher. Do we know why? That seems like an anomaly. Do we know why that is?
I have some of the answer. It first is after the great financial crisis, the housing crisis that caused debt loads to come down across everything. Mm. And then mortgage underwriting standards, the credit requirements of borrowers for homes really tightened up.
Mm.
And so most of the borrowing of households is home mortgages, and home mortgages became a lot harder to get
at much lower
LTVs or at much lower, you know, you can't get a 96% loan very easily anymore.
Yeah. Off
an arm. It's an 80%. So that's the biggest driver why home prices haven't fallen that much in this cycle is because the households were so lowly levered. They have low fixed, they have super low interest rates. And so the households are really healthy. And that would be, so you'd have to see a deterioration of home lending standards, I think, to see households start to have ballooning borrowings again.
That's so, I mean, it's really interesting. I really don't think anybody is thinking about debt in that way, because all you hear is we have never been spending more post-COVID, you know, that whole scenario. So
yeah like, here's the math. It's not true. I'll just give you the final slide, which basically like how do we pull this off, right? We have to have basically like called Goldilocks. We have to have fast growth of the economy, GDP, and that could be because of technology, that could be for lots of good reasons. You slow the debt growth, which actually seems very realistic. And then you have to have moderate interest rates. You have to have Fed funds, the soft landing, because there's no way you can close a $1 or $2 trillion gap, but you can't close a three plus trillion dollar gap. Yeah. So I guess one of my takeaways from this is that if we can't lower rates because of inflation or because of, you know, demand for debt, whatever the drivers might be, then a wall is inevitable. The economy will have to hit a wall because the amount of time it would take you to grow your way out of that hole is probably too long before you can no longer afford it.
So this is very, very interesting and important, because I guess, do you think, so we started this saying that, you know, the general thinking was that we were going to see 3 rate cuts. The markets, you know, pared back that 6 rate cut expectation. But now there's murmuring in question. Does that really happen? Can they really do it? The inflation data seems like it's sticky and headed in the wrong direction. Do you think the Fed cuts rates anyway at some point because they have to because of the debt, and they prioritize that over inflation, even though their mandate is inflation and full employment, that they find the cover somehow to reduce, and they're going to be forced into a corner to reduce rates because of the debt situation?
Yeah. I mean, if you don't mind, I'll go back to the sort of the punchline slide.
Yeah.
Which is, I feel like people are so focused on the short term, but there's, even when they cut rates, which you see here in this Fed, and this is the Fed dot map forecast, right? Right. All I'm taking is the Fed dot map, which they updated a little bit a couple of weeks ago, but there's still a lot of tightening happening as a consequence to higher rates as these things. And so this slowdown, fact that it hasn't slowed down yet, doesn't mean that it still has a lot of tightening left on the economy. Another, you know, talking about $500 trillion of additional debt service payments that are going to eat into consumption. And so the market is just, the problem with the market is it has such a short attention span. It really has a memory that lasts 3 to 12 months at most, maybe even like 3 to 12 weeks. And so it's because the rates went up, basically the things that are different this time is rates went up really fast. And second is that we had been in a period of a decade of ZIRP, almost 15 years. And so more people were fixed at lower rates. Mm-hmm. You go back to 2008, that period, there'd only been a period of low rates for 3 to 4 years.
That's super important, Ben. That's a super, super important point. That window of locking those low rates in, there were just less people. But now, especially when you're in the US, a little bit different everywhere else, they have more floating mortgages. But here, for a decade and a half, home buyers basically were able to lock into very low rates. So that's going to hold things steady for way longer. So it sounds like you're saying the Fed is trying to do something which I don't know that they've done before, which is game out the fade. You know, like sort of they don't really know, or maybe they have some idea. You just gave us a good plot of when these rate resets happen. And so they're trying to hit that sweet spot where they're going to start easing so that that lag from the easing happens in time, to be able to prevent the still coming pain from those rate hikes. So they may start hiking when it still looks strong because they know that the weakness is coming, but they're front running it.
We're going to take another quick break to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing. Few investments make a better long-term hedge against inflation, depression, and economic downturns than precious metals like gold and silver. Plan for the inevitable and protect your environment savings with a gold-backed IRA from Noble Gold Investments. Noble Gold Investments is the gold IRA company that Americans trust. The founders of Noble Gold have more than 20 years of combined experience in buying gold and silver. They have secured more than $1 billion in precious metals for their clients. Gold remains steady when inflation is on the rise and the dollar is in turmoil. Its value doesn't just hold, it increases during inflationary periods. And unlike money, gold can't be printed. It's your shield in times of economic uncertainty. Invest in something you can hold. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com/vision to get started. Don't wait. That's noblegoldinvestments.com/vision.
That's the only way you can get ahead of it. The whole argument that you can drop rates all of a sudden and prevent a recession. I mean, in 2008, that didn't work. In 2001, that didn't work. And I mean, it's not actually how the economy works. Mm. There's a leading and lagging effect from interest rates. And the lag effect is, I mean, look, you're seeing it here. I mean, it looks like it's, they will have started raising rates in 2022 and the cost of that hits in 2026, four years later.
Yeah. Do you think that, I mean, this is fantastic stuff, and I'm so happy that you shared it with us. And I think it was worth doing things a little differently for this, because this is the issue that we're all chewing over. Just want to get your thoughts quickly on the AI side of it, because as I mentioned at the start, you have this very unique perspective where you are so, and your background is so locked into the rate universe because of your commercial real estate background. Although you don't really do offices, you do more multi-homes and things like that. So you're not in the dreads, I think, of the worst of that. But you also have this innovation fund, a technology fund, and you've really been deep in AI. And so you have a view on both. Do you think the productivity benefits and the growth coming from AI can repeat that miracle that we saw in the 90s? Because there seems to be a lot of built-in skepticism about AI.
Yeah. I mean, to me, from my experience, there's no question. I mean, there's no question. The problem with the markets is the timing. Is that the market pulled a lot of the stuff forward. But, the famous Bill Gates quote, they people overestimate what they can accomplish in 1 year and underestimate what they can accomplish in 10 years. So the internet took a long time, right? I mean, you're talking about it was invented in the mid-90s, and you saw the productivity gain starting in 2005, right? You saw the era of high productivity growth. Sorry, right? It was from 1995 to 2005, and then Great Financial Crisis crushed it. But it takes a long time for it to basically work its way through the economy. We at the company have built. I mean, we have 2 million users. We get 30,000 tickets a month from users asking questions. We basically developed an AI product that handles customer service, and it resolves customers' concerns or questions by 97%. And it cut our load for our team by 50%.
Wow. I mean, that's just one example, but it's a powerful
one. Little example. Yeah. So there's no question AI is going to drive productivity. I think it's going to be bigger than the internet. But is it going to be fast enough?
That's the question. Because if you're what you're talking about, that's the question to outrun the debt.
Because interest rates basically, I mean, we have $2 trillion. By end of this year, there'll be a $2 trillion additional interest payment due. Like if the whole real estate industry knows what I'm talking about, because all of their buildings have low debt to equity ratios. The collateral, the properties have good collateral, and the Fed will track equity to collateral. They actually track this in Fred data, but they don't track debt service coverage ratio. In real estate, it's called DSCR. In home buying, it's DTI. But you basically have to have enough income to cover the debt payments. And when your interest rate doubles, right, like it has, you need more income. And so at some point, people and companies are going to have to start reallocating income away from productive uses to debt. And that is happening, going to happen all through this year. And that inevitably will cause a slowdown. And so the people who are worried about inflation or acceleration, I think that's a good concern in the short run, but it doesn't, I still don't understand. I mean, you could have slower growth. I mean, I guess you could have slower growth from the debt service and have higher real growth from productivity. I mean, it's a swirling mess because to try to imagine a scenario is just, but the delay in the cost of the interest rates is, I think, tricking the market.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And we've talked about it, but their time frames are shorter, right? Like everyone's like, look, it hasn't happened. They haven't kicked in, even though they understand. We're going to have to wrap it, but I want to squeeze this one really great question for Mark in, because I think we're all going to go back and watch this and try to wrap our head around it, because this timing issue is where everything is. I mean, this is what we need to figure out, and it'll affect everything in your portfolio. Mark asking, Ben, wouldn't this issue show up first in Europe or the UK with shorter maturities and repricing? So this sort of all of this tightening that's been done, we just mentioned so many Americans are locked into low interest rates, but that is not the case. We saw that with the gilt crisis in the UK. would you expect the proverbial shit to hit the fan there first? Is that the canary in the coal mine?
That's a really interesting insight. I would say on one hand, yes. The other hand, some of the countries are not as heavily indebted. So like a Germany doesn't have debt loads like America. So you'd have to look at like an Italy or some of the, or you know, some of the peripheral European countries. And if those peripheral European, Spain actually has a lot of repricing of floating mortgages. So that's probably a good canary in the coal mine, the more indebted peripheral European countries who've had I actually don't follow them as closely, but I can imagine that would be an early indicator.
Yeah.
That's smart.
I think Andreas has talked about this. I've done a bunch of stuff with him recently. And I think when we were talking with Dario, go back, those of you who are members, and look at that interview. I think they were talking about maybe Sweden, Canada. I think it's Sweden. Also as countries that would be first to show the strains just because of the nature of their mortgage market. But again, it depends. And Mark, that was the first part of Mark's question. Does it matter who has the debt, sovereign or private? It also matters how quickly you can resolve things, right? The European Union, we know, has to move more slowly. It's by committee. So policy response is going to matter too. So there's a lot in that.
Yeah. I wanted to answer just that question I think you just said, which is does it matter who holds the debt, sovereign or private? And so if the US government starts having trouble supporting the interest payments and need, it basically has to raise taxes or cut spending. So it eventually will take money out of the private sector to pay the higher public sector interest payments. And so if it raises taxes, right, essentially it's just, you're just moving the cost of their debt from one pocket to the other, from private to public. And that's why they have to look at the whole US. Just like on the other side, all that private debt got nationalized when the US government printed a lot of money into 2010s and 2020s. And so the money that the debts can move between the two, between public and private, but what matters is the whole, how much can the US afford? And the US has been stuck at 350 five times debt to income for the last 15 years. I think they're stuck there for a good reason. Mm. There's just, when you get to a higher debt load or a higher interest rate, the US economy can't carry it.
Yeah. We're going to end on this question. Doug asking, Ben, how will we know if the Fed's been able to accomplish the balance? What would you look for to indicate a positive outcome? I would say that goes both ways, right? Where would you be looking for signs that it's cracking and that this recession, you know, that we're not going to make up the growth and productivity in time to ward off something really nasty on the economic side? And or where would you start thinking, okay, you know, this is looking maybe like the 90s and maybe that we can handle that, it'll balance out. Is it productivity? Is that where it is?
Yeah. So this has like become my speedometer. Basically, are we growing GDP fast enough and debt slow enough that essentially we're keeping the ratios, we're sort of, you know, growing our way out of this challenge. And you could see a scenario, I mean, it's where that happens. But the risk, as you said, is that if you go inside a sector, like inside banking or inside businesses, the same thing I'm describing exists in that sector where you have this, you know, can the banking sector afford to stay at higher for longer? And if they can't, what you'll see is basically a bank failures. And so like the way we get there is two things. We have to have enough growth and we have to have enough resilience. So if we have enough resilience and nothing breaks, the banking sector being probably the biggest risk, then we can grow our way out of it. But if we can't, you'll see households start to pare back on spending, consumption will start to fall, or you'll start seeing bank failures or both. And so those are the clear two things people are looking for, and you'd see it in unemployment and you'd see it in spending.
Yeah, great, great stuff. And I'll just add the other worry on that we now know is with everyone having a bank teller in their hand, And, you know, the speed with which transactions happen, those sentiment swings and pullbacks can be a heck of a lot faster. And I worry sharper than we've seen in the past, because we're kind of in a new era of all of that. And ordinary people being able to move money around or make financial decisions so quickly because they have it on their phone. So that's going to be tough too. Ben, this was tremendous stuff. Thank you so much for sharing it with us first.
Yeah, no, I love this stuff. I'm so excited. If anybody wants to give me grief or ask questions, I'm always up for it.
We love it. And we'll share, if Ben's okay with it, we'll share it. We'll share the deck on our platform, so you can really take a look at this, because it's laid out in, frankly, in a way that all of us can understand, which is not always the case when you're trying to sort of parse through reams of Fed data. So thank you for crunching it all, Ben, and putting it in a digestible form for us all, because it makes it a heck of a lot easier. But this was fantastic. So lots of food for thought, people, as you head into the long holiday weekend. Ben, we appreciate you. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, listen, everybody, we are not here tomorrow because markets are pretty much closed, although that inflation data is coming out. So watch out for that. But as usual, we will be back next week, and we have a lot of great content dropping for you to take a look at over the weekend. Thanks, everybody. Enjoy the long weekend. Take care and good luck out there.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. At Real Vision, we arm you with the expert knowledge, time-efficient tools, and a powerful network to help you succeed on your financial journey. Get a taste of financial freedom with our free offer at realvision.com/free.